Welcome to Legal Aid Matters, a podcast from LAF, the largest provider of free civil legal services to low-income Chicagoans. On the show, we'll introduce you to the advocates who stand up for our clients, discuss how events in the news impact our work, and share stories on how we use the justice system to end poverty. Now, here's your host, Nubia Willman.
Welcome to Legal Aid Matters. Today we hear from Catherine Soha, Supervising Attorney of LAF's Veterans Rights Project and Women's Veterans Project. She discusses the support her team provides to veterans and why legal support for this community is so vital. Oh, and one more thing. You can now find this podcast on Spotify.
Do you listen to podcasts, actually?
Not that much. Barely. When one runs up and smacks me in the face.
Okay. So I have to listen to murder podcasts or...
Not yet. I'm afraid that if I do start, I'm probably going to get addicted.
Oh. So have you let me... You've listened to Serial, though, right? You didn't finish it?
So what I ended up doing... No, I didn't finish it as a podcast. Now, why didn't I finish it as a podcast? I think because I saw the Netflix...
Oh, okay.
...version.
Okay. Yeah, I only listened to season one, when it first came out, but, way after it had started. So I was able to listen to it all in one day. It was, around Thanksgiving, and I remember just, at work. No. Oh, okay. It was just, from, 9 to, past 5. I listened to all 8 episodes. It was crazy.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. I have to be in the mood for this, for sure. But it's almost always about murder.
Yeah.
It's like a weird thing, right?
It is, but I do think that makes it extra addictive. There's something about... I'll go up to the gym to work out. And especially on the weekends, there's no one around. And what do I end up putting on? Forensic Files.
Oh, my God. I love Forensic Files. Is there a TV up there?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I think I've seen every single Forensic Files episode. It's so embarrassing.
Yeah, it's pretty...
And I already know, he did it. Check out the leaves DNA and figure out who did it. That's amazing.
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's great. I love that. Well, thank you for joining us. We're here today with Catherine Soha, who is a supervising attorney in a very special project. And we'll get into that in a minute. But would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about what you do?
Sure. I'm Catherine Soha. I'm the supervising attorney with LAF's Veterans Rights Project. And I'm also the attorney for the Women's Veterans Project. And LAF's Women's Veterans Project was started by a woman attorney a few years ago. And it's basically it's our way of trying to make sure that women veterans are not left out of the population that we serve. So we serve all veterans, women, men, trans, but the Women Veterans Project is a way to make sure that we are remaining inclusive and actually pulling in women veterans, because they don't always go to the places that other veterans go. They don't always seek the services that the male veterans seek.
Okay. That's interesting. And so when did that project first start?
I believe it was 2013.
Okay. So we've been having it for a while. But when did you start at LAF?
Oh, boy. 2005.
Okay. And so you weren't always doing veterans work, though.
No, that's right.
Yeah, so what were you doing?
So I worked with survivors of domestic violence, actually since I graduated from law school in 2000. And now I work with other trauma survivors, including women veterans.
So you were mostly doing family law, I think? Or you were a generalist for a long time before we...
No, you're right. I was doing family law. Okay. So I did a lot of divorce, custody, orders of protection, cases like that.
Okay. And then in 2013 you transitioned, or is that when you started the...
2014. I started with veterans in 2014. So actually the Women Veterans Project was probably 2012.
Okay. And so in 2014. So you've been doing the veterans work since then. That's a good chunk of time, I think, to really kind of sink your teeth into it and understand the nuances of the area. Though I'm sure you feel like there's always more to learn.
There's a lot I still need to learn, because it's at that point that I became a generalist.
Interesting.
Right. So I've had a lot. I'm I'm really, really happy and excited to be learning so many new things. But it is daunting at the same time. So veterans benefits is a completely new area of practice for me.
Yeah.
And Social Security, we do a lot of that.
Yeah.
And that's a new area as well.
No, that's true, because I've always been a specialist. So I think the idea of setting them like, and now you're going to do bankruptcy or benefits or anything. I'm just like, ooh, I'm a little bit nervous about that. But no, that's great. I mean, you've been putting in the time. That's really great. So can you tell us a little bit about why LAF decided to focus on veterans? That wasn't always a project that we worked with or a population that we focused on.
Yeah, you're right about that. And I actually, you know, the further back we go in the LAF lore, mm-hmm. the more gets lost. but I believe the Veterans Rights Project was started by, I think it was John Anderson back in 2007,
mm-hmm.
and he was a veteran himself, and I believe that he felt strongly that LAF should be helping veterans and should be doing veterans benefits mm-hmm. cases, and so he started the project, but then he was called up to serve, mm-hmm. so he left LAF, and it has remained as a project at LAF after that, just staffed by different people.
Okay. So I guess it would be helpful to know, and it's funny because we happened to be at a dinner party recently, and I think my husband asked you, why do veterans, I mean, in a nice way, but he was like, why would veterans need help? And I think some people who aren't in this world believe that because someone's a veteran and because they're so respected, that this idea that they would need legal help or that they're not being given the right treatments and things like that
mm-hmm.
doesn't really happen. So could you explain a little bit, like, why would a veteran need an attorney?
That's an interesting perspective on it. A lot of our veteran clients are trauma survivors, and a lot of the women veteran clients that we have especially are survivors of multiple traumas.
Mm-hmm.
So they may have experienced traumas in their family of origin, they may have experienced trauma in their relationships, and then they may have experienced trauma during their military service.
Mm-hmm.
So oftentimes there are multiple barriers that get built up for them. Mm-hmm. And so they may need a lawyer for, you know, many of the other reasons that our clients do for consumer issues or for housing to preserve income supports or for domestic relations cases.
Mm-hmm.
But some of their cases have, like, maybe the unique veteran twist to okay. them. So, for example, if one of our clients is deployed, they may need to make a care plan for their child, and they may need to deal with domestic relations issues that involve them not being the custodial parent, for example.
Sure.
So they need attorneys who can represent them in these family law matters and who have familiarity with the laws that apply that protect them during the time that they're deployed. So that would be one example. And then there are a number of consumer laws that protect deployed or recently deployed or recently returned service members as well.
Yeah.
And so that's another place where having a lawyer could make a difference for a client.
And so what do you think is the more, like, kind of your bread and butter case that you're doing more frequently than others? Or does it vary?
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. interesting. I mean, I feel like we could fill a project with any type of case. Like, there are just so many clients and so many cases. But what we've ended up doing is a lot of veterans benefits cases because there just aren't that many other places where they can go.
Mm.
So veterans benefits are available to veterans who were injured in service or have an injury or impairment that was related to their service.
Mm.
And so especially veterans who have trouble working full-time as a result of their impairments, those folks should apply for veterans benefits so mm-hmm. that they can support themselves.
Okay, and is it easy to apply for these benefits? Are they able to do this usually by themselves, or is it something that we often have to help them with?
It really depends. Some people manage to do it on their own or mm-hmm. with the help of a VSO, which is a veteran service organization. Of course, some cases are more straightforward than others. And so for not very straightforward cases, mm-hmm. it often helps to have a lawyer who can go through the legal requirements to establish the claim and can also go through the medical records and pull out what's going to be important and persuasive to the VA, and, you know, put those, compile all that information together and present it in a way that's persuasive.
And this is correct that it's your project that ends up getting, like, the massive hundreds and hundreds of pages of documents to go through.
Yes, we're the ones that break the internet.
You guys do.
We break SharePoint.
And PDF and everything.
Yes,
yeah,
do.
That's impressive. I want to talk a little bit more about the Women's Project. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
This is Ashton Shelton, External Relations Coordinator here at LAF. Our work makes a difference in the lives of more than 30,000 Chicagoans living in poverty every year. We rely on your contributions to provide quality civil legal services to the most vulnerable members of our community. To support our work, please visit lafchicago.org/donate.
Catherine, I'm like, you gotta be more
specific.
And then they started very slowly. I think they said her maiden name, so she uses her married name here. So it was just like, I was confused, and I was like, well, there's a lot of Catherines. But then he's like, oh, she was married, and I was like, oh, I do know her. so there's just so many, and
yes.
You chose it not to go by Katie or.
No,
yeah.
My mom would have liked to have called me Kate, but there was another Kate in my like first grade class.
Yeah.
So she just decided it was Catherine.
Oh.
And that's just what it's been.
They didn't do like a Kate S and a Kate.
She, yeah. I don't know. She really didn't, like, once the one Kate was taken,
yeah.
Like, she was done with Kate.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Well, I obviously have not had that problem.
No, you don't. Do you get a nickname?
No, it's a, like, I don't think the name really kind of, like, matches
for one.
It doesn't
lend itself.
So
yeah.
I'm glad it's not super popular, but I am nervous that Wonder Woman is becoming more popular.
Yeah.
And in the comic series, she has a sister named Nubia.
Oh.
And I'm just like, oh, like, I would like, but like, I just don't want my name to become popular, then everyone will. So, you know.
Are you tracking it on the census baby names?
No, I should, though.
You should. You should. You should see where it's at.
I should create like a PR disaster so that no one wants to use
it. Right, exactly.
That might be the way to go. So we're back here with Catherine Soha, who is our supervising attorney in the Veterans Rights Project and the Women's Veterans Rights Project. Mouthful a little bit.
Yes.
Thank you so much again for being here. And right before our break, we were talking about the Women's Veterans Rights Project. And I wanted to talk a little bit, of course, I think we can't really discuss this issue without talking about the Me Too movement. You mentioned, of course, that some of our clients that are in that project have also suffered through various forms of trauma. So can you talk a little bit about, I mean, we've been doing this work for a long time, and the Me Too movement has maybe shed light to people who weren't aware of it. But can you talk a little bit about the work we do for sex assault survivors in this project specifically, and how has that movement impacted your work at all, or not at all?
Yeah, that's, you know, that's interesting because when I was doing domestic relations work, sexual assault came up often as like an active live issue in a lot of the cases. But in this particular project, many, many of our clients are survivors of sexual assault, and of course, military sexual trauma is now recognized as a major issue in the military. And I think the most recent statistic I saw was that 1 out of 5 women in the military have suffered some form of sexual assault. So it's unfortunately a pretty common occurrence.
Yeah.
And of course, there are a number of men who suffer sexual assault,
yes,
including in the military as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that the rate of occurrence is lower, and the vast majority, well, not vast majority still, but the majority of veterans are male.
Right.
But the actual, in terms of actual numbers, you come to something pretty close in terms of the number of women and men who have suffered sexual assault in the military.
Hmm.
So it really is a problem for all genders.
Yeah.
But the rates are higher for women. And so a lot of our cases, For example, if we're doing a veterans benefits case for a client, it would be common for that to be a claim based on PTSD,
mm-hmm.
and the cause of the PTSD might be a sexual assault. So sexual assault definitely comes up in our work.
Yeah. And so do you think since the movement has started, I guess maybe a little bit over a year ago, have you seen more clients more willing to discuss the trauma, or has it not really made a difference, or...
You know, I'm not sure yet.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I think that, you know, actually, I feel like maybe I've seen more men who are coming forward. And I think that the movement can only be positive in the sense that it's encouraging a much greater recognition of sexual assault as an issue,
right.
that people do not need to feel alone. People can find more resources, and there's greater understanding, I think, that the victims are not to blame.
Yeah. No, I definitely agree. I think it's really helping people who aren't necessarily working with survivors, who aren't survivors themselves, understand the different types of actions people may take and kind of like explain,
yes.
like, oh, why did this person not report right away? And I think just having those stories out there, as you mentioned, kind of makes people recognize that this is a problem, and kind of also just paints the picture of what a survivor might go through, so that people then understand why someone might delay reporting, or why they, you know, continue to work for that person, for example, which I feel like in the years past, that was always cause for suspicion, and it still kind of is, but I think it's maybe getting a little bit more clarified, at least I guess maybe that's my hope.
I think that, to me, that seems totally right.
Yeah.
It's like it changes our background assumption of facts
mm-hmm.
about the way the world operates.
Yes.
And it's substituting in a slightly more accurate set of background facts and background assumptions
yeah.
that sexual assault occurs, and that there's not one single way that a victim is going to react.
Right.
And that, especially in the context of, you know, if it's anything other than a stranger assault.
Right.
You know, that doesn't mean that the relationship is instantaneously severed.
Right.
And that is certainly true in the military.
Mm.
People are forced to remain in close contact
yeah.
and serving with the people who sexually assaulted them.
Yeah.
That's just how it goes.
Right.
And you, as the victim, are forced to make the best of it. And that has terrible, long-lasting
yeah.
consequences.
No, absolutely. And I think those people don't think about that, because they're like, why wouldn't you just quit? Or like, you can't.
You
can't
just quit.
You signed a contract. You might be in the middle of nowhere. Like, yeah, it's not. It's just simply not that easy. So I do think it's really great when these types of movements happen, because it helps the clients that we serve just maybe feel a little bit more supported and, you know, validated, I think.
Exactly. It's some validation.
Yeah. That goes a long way.
I actually had a male client who
mm-hmm.
saw an article on an article in GQ magazine
mm.
of all places
yeah.
about a man in the military who was sexually assaulted, and that was what encouraged him to come forward
wow, that's
and
fantastic.
Talk about it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's definitely, like, there's always a catalyst to then help. So I think
mm-hmm.
this is really great, and that we focus on this is really fantastic here. So you are the supervisor, but you're not a team of all yourself. Can you talk a little bit about
no.
your staff and a little bit of the work?
Definitely.
If they have specific areas they focus on, or just in general what they tend to do?
Yeah, so we are really an excitingly good-sized group now.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got 3 attorneys as well as me, and we also have a paralegal who is a veteran himself,
mm.
and we have a VISTA volunteer. So we have...
That's a good size.
Yeah, it is. It's nice. It's really a nice size.
Mm-hmm.
There's a tremendous amount of overlap. We do a lot of co-counseling of cases because we are generalists.
Mm-hmm.
We all have some veterans benefits cases. And then I tend to still take a fair amount of family law since
mm-hmm.
that's my background.
Yeah.
And Kate Shore... does some family law and consumer. Ellen Rayom, who is on maternity leave, does a fair amount of housing
okay.
and has also done Social Security disability. And Rachel is our newest member, and we're getting her up to speed on everything. And let's see, Tim and Susie do a great deal of intake.
Oh yeah.
They spend a lot of time doing intake. And also a fair amount of outreach.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, that's... We sometimes overlook how important intake and outreach is because it makes or breaks oftentimes being able to understand, like, what's... And the client, too, feeling comfortable and being able to pursue the case with us. And so that's really great.
I don't...
A good team. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think people would ever contact us except for the fact that we've gone out in communities mm-hmm. now that they know we really exist and we're not just on paper.
That's great. Yeah. We can't overlook the importance of outreach. Do you guys do these on your own, or are you connected to the engagement unit here, or how do your outreaches come about?
Gosh. Now we're on so many listservs that we get a lot of emails. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we try to make it to all the big stand downs or resource fairs okay. over the year. So we probably do, I don't know, 5 or 6 of those.
Okay.
The women veteran stand downs we always make. Mm-hmm. We run a clinic once a month at the Resource Center, which is affiliated with Jesse Brown. Mm-hmm. So we're out there once a month, and everyone knows that they can pop in. We see walk-ins there specifically because, you know, not everyone, for just a lot of different reasons, not everyone is going to be able to make an appointment.
Yeah.
And a social service provider knows that they can just send somebody over.
Right. And it's probably closer to a community, maybe where they're living or things like that, I would imagine. Yeah.
It's another place
yeah.
where, you know, if it's easier for people to go there, they can go there. And we try to contact the vet centers.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, I and maybe somebody else from the project will be out at the Oak Park River Forest Vet Center on the 23rd.
Oh, nice.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are nice and busy.
Yes, we're busy.
So it would be really nice to know, I think, if you could tell us if there was one rule or policy that is occurring that is just has improved the quality of life of the veterans that you serve, or if it was tweaked a little bit, how it could help the clients that we serve. Because I think we're so detached when we're not working in this area. Again, like, it's like, well, like, I kind of know that they maybe have access to some benefits, or maybe they're supposed to get preferences when they apply for a job. I'm not really sure. But I think, because we're so detached from it, we don't really understand the real sacrifices that they've been, you know, imposed mm-hmm. upon them because of the service, because it's obviously no fun to be deployed. But the trauma that they may observe, that they experience themselves, is something that's long-lasting. And I think it's easiest for us to just, you know, lots of people say, you know, thank you for your service. But, like, what is something really, like, a policy that already exists that we could continue to support that would help the veterans?
Oh, boy. Yeah. Like, the thing that really comes to mind mm-hmm. is if the VA could make decisions on the veterans benefits cases much faster.
Yeah.
That would help so many people.
Right.
Because there are people who, if they're unable to work, they can still be waiting years.
Oh my gosh.
To get benefits. Mm. It's not a fast decision-making process at all.
So they could wait years for
Yeah, they could wait years.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
They really could.
Wow.
So if the decision-making process was sped up, that would mm-hmm. be really great. And it would also, you know, it's not just the loss of support, of financial support, but it's also the sense that, like, you gave all for your country, and now your country is not turning around and keeping its promises to you.
Right, yeah.
So there's a real feeling of, like, abandonment among a lot of veterans who feel like they... You know, they completely stood up and made good on their end of the deal.
Right, absolutely.
And so why won't the government now make good on its end of the deal?
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I think, too, just it's not even just, like, a moral obligation. Like, mm-hmm. they sign contracts to be enlisted. And, like, there's, you know, so there is, like,
right.
legal
it's a contract.
If you're, like, beyond the moral argument, I think there is... there is a duty owed, and I think it's important that we make sure that those duties are met. Well, I want to talk a little bit, because we are here, it's Women's History Month, mm-hmm. we're rounding out the end of the month, and I wanted to know if you could share a little bit about, now that you're doing the Women's Rights Project here with veterans, and just specifically the work you've done in the past, I know with DV survivors, though it impacts both genders, it tends to sway more women as well. Just in general, is there someone in your work that has influenced you, a woman in your life that has influenced you in the work that you do?
That's a good question. I would say, legal services is largely, run by women. It's usually mostly women in the room.
Yes, yeah.
And so all my mentors and the people that I've learned from over the years have not all, but mostly been women. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that a number of my women mentors and supervisors have mm-hmm. given me is the model that, you're not always going to know the answer to a question, mm-hmm. but let's think about how we can find the answer.
Yeah.
You know, the mm-hmm. let's teach you how to fish.
Yes.
And not coming to their supervisees as the all-knowing, all-powerful, I'm the perfect litigator and lawyer,
yes.
and you can just observe my greatness
yes.
and learn that way. But instead I don't know the answer to that question, that's okay,
yeah.
because we're going to figure it out.
No, I agree. I enjoy, also too, I've been here for many years, and it's mostly women, and my direct supervisor has always been a woman, and I think just that, I wouldn't even say vulnerability, but that ability to be vulnerable in the sense that I don't know everything and I don't think you should expect that of me is sometimes not a universal tool that's used in leadership. We'll say that.
Really?
And I think there is a huge benefit to that, because then as a staff attorney, when you're new especially, you don't have to you're not so nervous constantly, what are they going to think of me when I don't know mm-hmm. the answer? And I do think that's a little bit different than in different other atmospheres that are run by different people. So I agree with that assessment completely. Another thing about you is that I know you are just a very dedicated person who exercises, which I think is a little unique. Yes, because we used to be on one of the grants together before, and I think you went to a conference, and everyone was so amused that you were still going to work out, at the end of the conference.
Oh, that's too funny. I don't even remember that, but that's
because
probably true. I probably did do that.
Yeah.
Everyone was drinking a margarita, and I was like, no, I need to go to the gym.
That's so impressive. Because, first of all, I think I paid for the gym membership. I've never been there my entire time. That's why I asked, is there a TV?
I noticed that means you probably haven't been there.
I might go there now to watch Forensic Files, but this obviously has to be part of your self-care. And then my big question for it is, though, how do you find the commitment and the discipline to do it?
Oh my gosh,
because you've obviously have found the trick.
I don't know. I mean, you're completely right, it's self-care.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great way to just burn energy
mm-hmm.
and burn negative energy.
Mm.
And to me, especially if I'm running, it's a complete reset. It's
Ooh.
As good as sleeping 8 hours.
Oh my gosh.
Because you can have a terrible frame of mind before you go for a run, and you run especially really hard, and at the end your frame of mind is fresh and new.
Oh wow. So you mostly just you use the treadmill.
Yeah, I mean, I'm coming off an injury, but nobody wants to hear about that. So
no,
runners always complain about their injuries.
You're Well, I have never experienced a runner's high, but I guess I will keep trying to see if you're telling the truth.
Oh, yeah. Forensic Files will help get you there.
You're running from the murderer, maybe.
Right.
So we're almost out of time, so I just wanted to ask you what I ask everyone as we end the episode, and that is, why does legal aid matter to you?
Oh, I mean, I guess legal aid matters to me. I mean, in the most personal way, I feel like I have seen some of my clients go from the lowest point in their lives
mm-hmm.
to becoming amazing, strong, productive people who do so much for themselves, their families, their kids, their
mm-hmm.
community. And it was just a little bit of help from a lawyer that helped them get themselves where they needed to be. Mm-hmm. And to be part of that is just a huge privilege. It's a privilege to see somebody, you know, make a complete success out of their lives, mm-hmm. and to be some small part of that. I have a lot of clients who have inspired me over the years. Mm-hmm. I think they come from positions that, you know, they've faced a lot of barriers, they've overcome a lot of barriers. Mm-hmm. And if people really knew what some of our clients have done against all odds, yes. they'd have a really different idea of like who a superhero is and who should be, you know, lionized in this society.
No, I agree. Yeah. Well, no, thank you so much. I think we're definitely on the same page, and I think it is the little help that we're able to do can really transform them, but it's really us just helping them navigate a very complex system. But it's amazing what they can do with just that little bit of just, mm-hmm. you know, support. So thank you so much for being here. Thank you everyone for listening, and we will see you in the next episode of Legal Aid Matters.
This has been Legal Aid Matters. We're produced and edited by Ashton Shelton. Our music is by Poddington Bear. And our amazing host is Nubia Woolman. Thank you for listening.